Hello and welcome. Today we're stepping into a Europe on its knees and watching how, against all odds, it stood up differently. Not a dusty tragedy, but an economic earthquake, the Black Death. Picture this. You walk into work tomorrow and half the people are gone. The tasks don't shrink. Fields still need plowing, bread still needs baking, ships still need unloading. Suddenly, the people who remain, people like you, can name their price. That was Europe from 1347 into the early 1400s. Before the plague, population was bursting. Then wave after wave hit. By 1400, Europe had tens of millions fewer people. That wasn't just grim, it flipped the labor market. For the first time we can really trace, ordinary workers could say, "Pay me more, or I'll go somewhere else." And they did. In England, farm laborers who'd earned pennies a day started making roughly double within a generation. Imagine your paycheck doing that. One year you barely afford porridge and rough bread, next you can buy meat more often, better tools, maybe a bit of ale without guilt. Life got measurably better for many working people. Not everyone, not everywhere, and not all at once, but enough to rattle the old order. Here's the twist. Medieval peasants weren't supposed to negotiate. Many were bound to the land under villainage, born into obligations they didn't choose. But when labor grew scarce, those bonds frayed. Entire villages emptied as survivors moved to places where the deal was better. Elites tried to slam the brakes. In England, the Crown passed a law in 1351, freezing wages at old levels. You can't ask for more, even if half your neighbors are gone. Out in fields and markets, people ignored it. What law says and what life demands are two different things. Then something quietly revolutionary. Work became a negotiation. Instead of paying in labor dues, days owed to a lord for free, more and more people paid in cash. Landlords began offering money rents instead of demanding service. Mundane? Not at all. This was the creaking pivot from a world of inherited obligation to one of contracts. What are the terms? You can see it on paper. Manors that ran on unwritten expectations began writing agreements. This much pay, for this much work, for this many days. A small strip of parchment instead of a memory of what you owed. A step toward modern employment. And the faint beginnings of labor rights. On the land, ripple effects were enormous. With wages up and workers scarce, landowners faced a choice: complain or change. Many pivoted to sheep. Why sheep? Because wool was medieval gold. It needed fewer hands and brought in more cash than grain. Fields once sown with wheat, now fattened flocks. Records show fewer plow teams, more grazing, more wool moving through ports. It helped unravel the centuries-old open field system and pushed Europe toward enclosed, profit-driven farming. The landscape changed. Some abandoned plots turned wild, nature reclaiming what people couldn't keep working. Elsewhere, survivors grabbed the best soils and combined them into larger, more efficient holdings. Fewer people, smarter use of land. Output per worker went up, profit went up. Necessity sparked invention. Before the plague, mills and mechanical gadgets were spreading slowly. After, they became survival tools. If you can't find four strong backs to grind grain, you find a water wheel. If your best laborer leaves for higher pay, you build a windmill. Communities that embraced labor-saving tech bounced back faster. Crisis rewards the adaptable. The Black Death also tore a hole through Europe's spiritual life. Priests tended the sick, comforted the dying, buried the dead, and died in terrible numbers. Whole parishes were left without clergy. Out of desperation, the church ordained people with less training just to keep last rites and Sunday Mass going. One year you trust Father Thomas, the next, a very young, overwhelmed priest stumbles through Latin he barely knows. People grieved. People doubted. If prayers couldn't stop this, what else might be wrong? Doubt didn't topple faith, but it loosened the lid on long simmering questions. Over time, that pressure fed reforms, experiments in spirituality, and centuries later, the Reformation. History changes slowly, then fast, then slow again. The plague accelerated the churn. Medicine took a hard look in the mirror. Medieval doctors worked with ancient theories. They couldn't see the disease, had no antibiotics, no germ theory. But there was observation, and city governments forced to act. In Italian ports, leaders tried something bold. Keep ships and sailors outside the city for a set time before letting them in. 40 days. 40 giorni. Quarantine. Clumsy, sometimes cruel, often inconsistent, but systematic. A first big step toward public health as something we do together, not just something we pray for alone. Add this up, and you get a world stumbling into modernity. Not in a single leap, not cleanly, and not everywhere. But a world where workers could move and bargain, where paperwork replaced presumption, where farms answered more to profit than custom, where machines filled in for missing hands, where faith mixed with doubt, and where city officials posted rules at the gates and said, "For the common good, we wait." If that sounds familiar, it should. In our own lifetimes, a pandemic shoved entire systems into fast forward. Remote work, rerouted supply chains, rapid scientific collaboration. The Black Death was that, multiplied. We should never romanticize the loss. But the people who survived didn't rebuild the same house. They put the door in a new place. They added windows. They changed who held the keys. I like to imagine one ordinary person in, say, 1370. Let's call her Alice. Her father was a villain, tied to a manor. She remembers bringing him bread while he worked the Lord's field for free. After the plague, her brothers are gone. Alice is tough, shrewd, and tired of surviving. A nearby town needs weavers. Wool is king now, and they're paying well. She walks away from the village where her family lived for generations. At the town gate, she hears something new. Yes, they'll hire her, and it's all written down. A scrap of parchment, a clear wage, a term of months. Not freedom as we know it. But for Alice, a shift. She pays cash rent for a small room, buys bread and meat more often, maybe keeps a little coin back at week's end. When her employer tries to cut her pay, she can threaten to leave and be taken seriously. Multiply Alice by thousands across Europe and you see why feudalism buckled. Not everyone won. Some landlords dug in. Some communities withered. Some regions never recovered their old vibrancy. Inequality didn't vanish, it changed shape. But the center of gravity moved. Work got pricier. Time got measured. Mobility stopped being a crime and started being a strategy. Institutions learned. The first quarantines were messy, but they taught cities to observe, record, and act. The church's crisis didn't end religion, it made space for argument and reform. Economic elites learned to adapt or lose. Ordinary people learned painfully and powerfully that scarcity could give them a voice. So when we ask why Europe tilted, in the long run, toward market economies, wage labor, and law written on paper and enforced in courts, part of the answer lies in those terrible years. When half the workforce is gone, you can't keep pretending the past is a plan. You write a new one. If this sparked your curiosity, there's more detail in the written piece. Records, examples, the nuts and bolts of rising wages, reorganized farms, and the first public health rules. But carry this simple, complicated truth. Catastrophe doesn't just destroy. It reveals. It reveals what a society is made of, and what it might become when people under pressure insist on different terms. And the next time you hear the word quarantine, or sign an employment contract, or negotiate your worth, remember, you're standing on the long, uneven road that began, in part, with a pandemic that upended the medieval world and nudged Europe toward the modern age.